Welcome to the Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 18th on the West Coast, now February the 19th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome all those who may be listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. We appreciate you helping us spread the truth around the world. Lots of interesting things going on these days, and the foremost of all the questions man should be asking him or herself. When I say man, I mean mankind, humanity, and that would give us a perspective as to why the things that are happening are happening, or those things that are said to be happening are happening. And we know so little about ourselves, especially our past. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes with tonight's guest. But before we bring him online, we're going to talk about our past in terms of our pastime paradise.
Isolation, exploitation, mutilation, mutation, miscreation, confirmation to the evils of the world. And spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. And spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. And men looking in their minds for the day that sorrow's lost from time. Keep telling of the day when the Savior of love will come to stay. Tell me who I'm in. Will come to be. I'm in need of them. Are you and me? Proclamation, gracefulation, consolation, integration. Verification of revelation, acclamation for salvation, vibration, stimulation, confirmation to peace of the world. Been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. Been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. They've been spending most of their lives living in a future. Time.
Oh, that was Stevie Wonder, and from his album Songs in the Key of Life, Pastime, Paradise. We're going to be talking about that topic in a very esoteric sense and in a very scientific sense. Tonight's guest is my regular Friday night co-host. He's our resident science advisor. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher. My good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. Pleasure to be with you as always.
Well, you sound like you're in good spirits this evening, so I think we're going to have a humdinger of a show. What say you about that?
Well, I'm in good spirits, but I think that the topic matter or the subject matter has got me activated to a certain degree.
So, I hear a rant coming on.
No, not a rant, but definitely, I definitely want to run with it, though.
Okay. On some past shows, we've been talking about very recently suppressed or hidden technologies, and also we've been discussing some very fundamental aspects of the scientific makeup of the Earth, the solar system, the galaxy, the universe, and how this all works together. And part of what we've discussed on some past shows is mankind's history. And we're making discoveries all the time. And I know that that's a very important topic with you in light of the work that you do. And I want to allow you to run with it. So I'm going to sit back, fasten my seatbelt, and I'll ride shotgun tonight. How's that?
Well, at least for a few minutes. what I wanted to start off with, Don, which I think is kind of an interesting thing, you know, back in the 60s when I was going to college, I was fortunate enough to ally myself with Ivan Sanderson. And Ivan was a very amazing man, well accomplished in many directions. He was a naturalist. He worked for the British Navy during the war. He just did a lot of different things. He was an explorer, and also he was very much into the investigations of Charles Fort, or Fortean, the author of the Fortean concept. And I associated with him for about 3 years. And unfortunately, after that, his wife died and then he died. And that was the end of our relationship on this plane. But anyway, during that time period, there were two very amazing experiences that I at least had a partial sharing in. And this was back at a point in time when there was very little tolerance for any kind of really provocative activities in the field of archaeology. And not only that, but you also have to realize that there wasn't so much of this stuff known, or at least by the general public. There was always those people who delved into it on their own, and there was always an inkling that there was more to various subjects than meet the eye. But there were the two adventures that Ivan was involved with when I knew him. And one of them was he was called up to northern Minnesota to act as a consultant on a site that had been discovered up there. And it was absolutely of Viking origin. I mean, there wasn't any question about it. I mean, the lodges, the layout of the place, the artifacts that they found, the graves that they opened, you know, it was an amazing Viking settlement. And, of course, the general belief is that they never went that far west. They reached our continent via Iceland and Greenland and Newfoundland, and, you know, they stayed mostly on the coast. But here was a settlement that was obviously reached by way of the Great Lakes. And this was a really exciting find. Ultimately, what happened was that the Smithsonian was involved in this, and they sent people up there, looked the whole thing over, took a lot of photographs, went back to Washington, and then they returned within 2-3 weeks and said, rebury it. Now, that was the official involvement of the Smithsonian Institute on that particular finding. The other thing that I was involved with, at least from the standpoint of looking at the pictures and stuff that they came back with, was a case where there was supposedly a hunter who had shot a Bigfoot and or a Sasquatch. And this entity was then quick frozen in an ice plant so that the body would be preserved. And it made various rounds in certain scientific circles before it disappeared completely. But the thing that was most impressive about that particular find was that Ivan was called quite quickly before the other authorities got wind of this. And he went up there and apparently took photographs, made sketches, asked a lot of questions of the hunters. The thing that was interesting for me was that if this had been a rubber model that was just encased in a block of ice, there would have to have been an enormous amount of physiological detail supplied by whoever made the model and whoever thought the thing through, because there were so many details involved that you probably wouldn't think of, that I just found it pretty stimulating, even though I didn't see the actual carcass. But the one thing that was interesting was that he had been shot twice, as I recall, once in the abdomen or the chest area, and another where the bullet passed through, I believe it was the lower leg. And there were pools of blood in the ice, you know, in these areas where the body had bled out. And the lower leg, it looked like, had been broken by the bullet, and there was a bone fragment sticking out of the skin. Now, I admit that somebody with a lot of medical expertise and a good imagination probably could have thought all that stuff up and put it in there, but to what end? If you're going to make a lot of commotion about a thing like that, ultimately it's going to be examined, and you're going to be designated as a fraud. I just could never understand the logic of it. I assumed that it was real. But the thing that I want to get at is that back in those days, there was very little tolerance for things of that sort, and the body or whatever it was disappeared in short order. Now, the interesting thing is, over the years, I've been following up on stuff like this because my interest has never waned. And recently, I've noticed that there's an enormous amount of material coming out. And what I wanted to, and some of it is pretty doggone striking. I mean, there's things here that I hadn't heard of before, although most of it I'm familiar with. And I thought it'd be interesting to just read a list of these various discoveries which have come to light and the countries that they're associated with, and use that information to set the stage for some remarks that I would like to make a little bit further along. The first of these has to do with the country of Egypt. And what's been investigated recently, which is pretty interesting, is the fact that close-up investigations of the Giza Plateau, where rocks were removed and otherwise managed for the sake of the construction of the Sphinx and surrounding monuments, seem to demonstrate that there was a lot of cutting done with saws and high-speed drills. And they've come to that conclusion by actually examining the cuts themselves microscopically, and apparently they look like the work of a machine tool rather than something manual. The other thing that I found extremely interesting was that a number of optical lenses have been found, ground with amazing precision, and obviously the kind of precision that's required from a grinding machine. Also, recent investigation of various mummies has illustrated the interesting fact that they have, not all of them, but some of them have fillings in their teeth and bridges, and also that there have been artificial teeth inserted into the jawbones of some of the departed from that era. In King Tut's tomb, there was found a set of plans which essentially depicted an airplane. Now, whether anybody built one from that or not, I don't know, but that's pretty striking in its own right. The other thing that's come to light, Egyptian doctors routinely perform pregnancy tests and determine the sex of unborn children. They also performed operations and fed nourishment through tubes, fitted artificial legs and hands, and they actually had use of anesthetics and sophisticated instruments to perform surgery both on bone marrow and brain tissue. And, of course, there's the interesting story, which crops up again, about the eternal lamps, which once lit remained burning for centuries and were discovered, you know, hundreds if not thousands of years later, still burning in the sealed tombs and what have you. And last but not least, with the Egyptian area, we find doors in various temples and monuments that seem to have been able to be activated by sound waves. This in particular with the temple in Karnak and in Thebes. Moving along to China, which of course has another ancient history as we know, we found that in 1000 BC, nerve gas was actually used in warfare. 2,500 years ago, special mirrors were invented, which when set up in pairs could transmit images similar to modern television. The biggest pyramid in the world resides in China, and estimates, even though it's eroded, estimates suggest that originally it had a height in the neighborhood of 1,200 feet, which is 2.5 times the height of Egypt's Great Pyramid. And if it had been hollow, it could easily contain 26 Empire State Buildings. The ancient Chinese apparently were familiar with X-rays, heart transplant operations, and other forms of surgery. In the Americas, a 400-foot pyramid has been discovered on the seabed off the coast of Florida. And speaking of the Chinese, there's evidence that they had expeditions to this country as long ago as 2200 BC. They've been to the Grand Canyon and mined opals and gold nuggets in Nevada, and they have found references to the fact that they noticed seals frolicking in San Francisco Bay. The ancient Maya used screw propellers on some of their boats. They had books that were made of gold leaf, and they even had diving suits. Also, of course, the Mayans had amazingly accurate surgical instruments, and some of the blades that have been recovered were 1,000 times sharper than modern platinum plus blades. Mayan dentists made use of dental crowns and fillings, and some of them are still in place after 1,500 years. Then there's the fascinating situation about the Mayans having discovered, or it could have been the Incas, but one of the two of them, having discovered a compound which allows rocks to be softened. And I did a whole show on that a number of years ago when we did the Fawcett mystery, as you might remember, Don.
Yes.
In the Mediterranean, I skipped the part. Bathtubs made of gold and silver and fed with water pipes made of gold and silver. In the ancient areas of South America, like Tiwanaku, for instance, various stones were fastened together with huge bolts weighing as much as 1 ton and made of solid silver. In modern times, 1963, a Peruvian surgeon by the name of Francisco Gravano saved a patient's life using surgical instruments recovered from a 3,000-year-old tomb. In one of the areas of Peru can be found four-dimensional art, which, of course, is a 3D sculpture, which changes its appearance and apparently changes its shape in accordance with the exposure to the sun in different positions. In one ruin that was found deep in the jungle, they recovered 30-foot-long rolls of sheet metal wallpaper jointed together with tiny miniature rivets. In Ecuador, there are vast artificially formed series of tunnels which disappear under the Andes Mountains and also penetrate out towards the sea. Some of these were actually explored by astronaut Neil Armstrong. Moving to the Mediterranean area, if we look at the history of ancient Greece, we find that they had a pretty interesting familiarity with many unusual weapons, including Greek fire, which was shot from catapults for setting boats on fire, and they also had special fire which burned underwater, and that sounds like some kind of phosphorus-based compound. They had devices in their temples for automatically opening and closing of huge doors 40 and 50 feet high. Sewage systems were available, similar to the ones we have today, which gave sanitary benefits to each individual household. And interestingly enough, coming from the same area, we find that the Greeks had a computer made of brass and gears of all sorts and was used to calculate the position of the planets. So we're talking about a very large amount of sophistication in that particular aspect. Also, there's quite a bit of talk about human-like robots that were capable of motion in several parts of the world, not just Greece. In Russia, there is a valley where there are scenes engraved on the rocks with such a clever arrangement that as the sun rises and the rays of the sun move across the canyon walls, it produces luminous moving pictures that last for about 15 minutes. In Babylon and in the Fertile Crescent area, protective face masks were used for patients apparently undergoing radiation therapy. They were capable of eye cataract operations. There's a great deal of evidence of electric dry cell batteries being used to power light bulbs and the use of sound waves to lift heavy weights. As a matter of fact, the Baalbek platforms are in this area in ancient Lebanon, composed of 2,000-ton stone blocks that were moved into position 20 feet above ground level, and this could not even be done today. We don't have cranes that can lift 2,000 tons. In Australia, wrecked Phoenician ships have been found on the west coast of Australia. And in addition to that, a Phoenician port and a mine which was well developed in its day and appears to be it appears to be from the era of 900 BC that it was actually worked. So what are we saying here? Well, this is interesting. The same people who work at the Smithsonian must also work at Queensland University, because they reportedly sent an archaeologist to the site to look at this Phoenician settlement, and they were rigidly instructed to find nothing. In other words, when they don't want you to know about something, they do everything they can to cover it up. There's also numerous traces of Egyptian colonization in Australia, and these have been excavated to some extent, unearthing such things as coins, statues, inscriptions, tombs, and various religious artifacts. In India, ancient writings concerning mathematical measurements made and calculations made on the disintegration rates of subatomic particles to an accuracy of 1/300,000,000th of a second. It would be interesting to know how that was done without instrumentation to verify it. And also, considering the fact that there was supposedly a war between India and Atlantis over 10,000 years ago, it's interesting to note that recently there were 44 skeletons discovered which were radioactive in their graves. And let's see. There's a sundry of other things, too, like, for instance, the use of aluminum for various things, plastic evidence of plastic surgery, including nose transplants, fluoroscopes, X-ray devices, etc., etc. Oh, and, of course, flushing toilets. And then, finally, we have evidence of the fact that the world had been surveyed from the air many, many thousands of years ago, resulting in a whole variety of different maps, some of which are still floating around, like the famous Perry's Rees collection, and, by the way, supposedly supplied some of the impetus for Columbus to cross the Poison Sea and discover America. And a lot of these ancient cities that we've talked about, there's a lot of possibility that they were illuminated by a form of electricity unknown to us today. So, that's a pretty impressive list, considering the fact that the common teaching suggests that we all originated from monkeys, lived in caves for many years, didn't do much of anything until about 6,000 years ago. And then all of a sudden, we just flourished. But if all that's true, what's interesting is that a lot of the artifacts that have been found recently, some of these reports, which I didn't go into, I just read the headline, some of these reports have been written by what have become called renegade archaeologists, who are sick and tired of going on these expeditions and journeys into the far corners of the world to dig up this stuff and then have it taken away from them, and in some cases even put into steel chests, welded shut, and dumped in the Atlantic Ocean so that nobody can find them. Now, why would the establishment go through all that trouble, you know, to keep the public from realizing that there's something wrong with the history of the Earth as it is presented to us? I can only think of two reasons for that. One is that they just don't want the lie to crumble. You know, they've painstakingly painted a picture of man evolving, if we use that term, from the stupid caveman image to the present day situation where he now sits at the pinnacle of his advancement and holds a great position with technology, science, medicine, etc. The other reason that I can think of, though, is that I think that maybe there's a possibility that there's a certain amount of concern that one of these times there's going to be evidence found that's going to link our origins, or at least some part of our history, with not only with extraterrestrials, but perhaps with the same characters that are running around raising all kinds of havoc in the world today. And those are the individuals, Don, that you refer to as the reptilians.
Yes.
So anyway, I thought that that was an interesting way of shocking people into the opening of what hopefully will turn out to be an unusual show. There's an awful lot of stuff there. Any one of those topics that we mentioned tonight is earth-shattering, never mind the fact that according to the report I was reading that from, there's over 1,000 separate incidents which have been written up and accompanied by photographs and actual artifacts.
Yes. I do have a couple of comments I'd like to make, and I've been sort of mentally keeping a running tabulation of what you addressed. There's an amazing synchronicity with a member of my family in some of what you discussed. You began with this Minnesota discovery, and I suppose despite the fact that the Smithsonian Institution shut down this find of the Viking background, we can thank the NFL for reviving it. We have the Minnesota Vikings. Your story about Sasquatch, or the Yeti, if you want to call them that, as they do in the Far East, is kind of interesting because we've heard these reports, and you hear this on some of the shows like Coast to Coast, either with Art Bell or George Norrie. They've been gaining great mileage out of that story for years. Several months ago, I alluded to the fact on this show, and I can't recall if you were on the show with me that night. Refresh my memory if you were. General Jeremiah described a small expedition that was up on Mars when he was attacked by such a creature. And on subsequent visits, they've actually seen a whole clan of these beings living in a mountainous area. So I'll just make that comment about Sasquatch. Now, you mentioned Egypt, and then you went to, I've got a lot to say about that, but you went to China. What's interesting is I have a cousin, late cousin, who was a brilliant heart surgeon and had invented artificial veins and arteries for performing advanced heart surgeries so that you wouldn't have to cut out usable arteries or veins out of the leg of a person to repair the damaged arteries in the heart. And that's a normal procedure that they do today. But he had been fighting with the FDA, he had told me, for 14 years trying to get this approved. And he himself died of a rare form of leukemia, which I'm finding out several other people have died from, and it's related to radiation. And it would be very, very possible that, I don't know this for certain, but that his inventions in that regard had been hijacked by the government and used for sinister purposes. Also, I'm speaking about China because he performed over 10,000 gratis operations on indigent Chinese children, orphans, and even adults. Over 10,000 heart surgeries in his career. He lived in Minneapolis, by the way. just a coincidence that you should mention those, and it just rang like a loud bell in the back of my mind. So I thought I would mention that they would allow him to do that is kind of interesting. One would presume that the Chinese know their history, and the reason they're not sharing all of this is because of the amount of money that is to be made by performing those surgeries, that everything's been turned into this obscene business where obscene profits are made. I'm not speaking about the good that the doctors, that the surgeons do in performing the surgeries, but they've turned that into sort of an organ farm, where when they need a heart, they'll take someone who's a political prisoner and remove their heart and sell it for $300,000 or more. It's kind of interesting. So if you wonder why these things are being hidden from us, of course, they show an entirely different story than what we've been told. How do you explain the 30 to 40 foot tall skeletons with reptilian features, six fingers, six toes, or thereabout, and a head that is almost the size of a full-grown human? How do you explain the existence of them finding those things in Greece, for example, not too long ago? So that's my comment.
Well, of course, it's an amazing situation. And, you know, when I was younger, before I got involved with the serious type of research that I've been attempting to do, I really and truly wanted to dedicate my life to finding the answers to some of these things. It was just totally beyond me why nobody ever picked up the ball. You know, one story that is very, very famous, when I was with Ivan Sanderson, I never met this guy, and I think he's still alive, but I read his books, and there was a Frenchman by the name of Bernard Huvermont, who wrote a book called On the Track of Unknown Animals. And anybody that has an interest in cryptozoology should definitely read this book. But one of the most fascinating stories in the whole thing for me was the fact that back around the time of the last ruling czar in Russia, before the revolution, there was an expedition up into the Taiger Forest area of Siberia. And I don't know what they were looking for, but what was interesting was when they came back, they reported the fact that they had encountered an entire herd of mammoths. Now, when I first heard that, first of all, I was very excited. But secondly, I said to myself, well, wait a minute. You know, surely if you had mammoths roaming around in some local forest, you know, there'd be a lot of evidence of it. It would be something you couldn't keep secret. But then when I did some research on the size of this place, I mean, this forest is so huge that it's like bigger than a third of the United States. It's one forest. So, and considering where it is, where it's located, I doubt very much there's too many people tramping around in there. So there's all sorts of things on this planet that are very tantalizing, at least for someone with an adventurous spirit. And they don't all have to cost hundreds of millions of dollars to find out the truth about them. I mean, consider that expedition into that area of Siberia. I don't think it would be all that difficult to go in the springtime when it wasn't that frozen up there and that cold, and just nose around in there to see if there's any remnants of this reported herd of mammoths. Another interesting story, which actually made the TV, and I couldn't believe that I watched it myself, there was a huge mastodon that was discovered still living, and of course, if there's one, there has to be another one somewhere. And I think it was somewhere in, I don't remember if it was Cambodia or Vietnam, but it was in those jungles in that part of the world, or maybe it was closer to Tibet, further north. From there. But anyway, they went and actually took pictures of the thing and they put it on TV. So every once in a while, something sneaks out. It's just enough to tantalize you, just enough to wet the whistle. But when you start to put all this stuff together and you realize that all these guys that are doing these expeditions, all different places in the world, they can't all be lying. And what would they have to gain, to lie about this stuff? And the fact that most of these discoveries are accompanied by artifacts, which of course are eventually done away with, or at least hidden, only lends to their credence as being true. The thing that's upsetting about it, at least for me, is I prefer a world that's got a lot more mystery in it. It has a much more exciting and varied history than the nonsense that we're spoon-fed in our educational system. And, through all my investigations, I really believe that that's the kind of world that this place is. And it just goes beyond me why they can't just report things as they are and let people put the facts together, the way they want to. Why does it have to be this ridiculous, pre-organized ascent of man, starting from some form of primate coming up to the present time, and there's no room for any other possibilities? That's what really irks me.
Well, here's what's interesting about what you just said. If that was true, then we should assume the Illuminati came from the same place. You neglected to mention monkeys, by the way. So simians. wouldn't that be the case unless they're something other than what they tell us they are? You see, what makes them extra special from us? Is it the game?
You've hit on something very interesting. If they have some form of biological link that goes either to a form of extraterrestrial life or a remnant of an ancient society that was on Earth, in antediluvian times, and they have managed to rescue and sustain knowledge from that era, maybe they could get away with feeling superior. But that's all the more reason why you think they'd share it. Why not impress the rest of the world with the facts? If they're really descendant from a superior race, they should prove it instead of suppressing all this information.
Yeah, Jim, the simple answer to that question that you asked, and I know you're asking it rhetorically, it would empower us and it would enable us to acquire the knowledge of who we are and the remembrance of who we are. And in that, we regain our power and we can no longer remain slaves in a slave society. That's the basic answer.
Well, apparently it's the answer to an awful lot of things because when you stop and think of it, this is done uniformly across the board, regardless of what the actual subject matter is. I see it in physics. I know people who've reported the similar things in the world of chemistry and optics. No doubt there's plenty of evidence of mechanical devices, that have been suppressed. As a matter of fact, somebody was telling me not too long ago, excuse me, that disassembled machines were found in some sort of cavern or something over in Egypt, which may well have been used to lift enormous weights when they were assembled. So, I mean, there's just, no matter where you look, there's evidence of superior knowledge in the past. And I might also add that from the spiritual and moral point of view, there's also a great deal of information to suggest that mankind has de-evolved over the centuries in a lot of ways. It's not all a question of man's ascent, but, you know, there's possibility that in some respects there has been a descent.
Yes. Well, if I can refer to something that was mentioned on my show last night, for the past two nights, maybe unbeknownst to you and some of the listening audience, I had Dr. John Coleman on as my guest Wednesday and Thursday night of this week. And I posed a question. He authored several books. They're very interesting books, very informative. One called The Conspirators' Hierarchy, The Committee of 300. And the other book he had written was that we were discussing was his book on Tavistock, the Best Kept Secret in America. And Tavistock being the Institute of Human Relations, as they called it. And I asked him a specific question. Now, my understanding is that Dr. Coleman has an intelligence background with MI6. It's alluded to in his book, in the foreword. So, but he didn't really want to talk about that. And I posed a question because we were talking about how they determined how the mind control was going to be based as a foundation. What was the construct going to be? And they had Sigmund Freud in there. And of course, if you've studied Freud at all, his basic theories and his postulates were that man was obsessed with sex. That would be sort of an innate drive for the sustenance of the species. But they took that base drive in man's being, which is physical in nature. It does have a connection to spirit, and it does have a connection to the mental body as well. But they focused on the physical aspects, which lowers the frequency of the individual. The more you disconnect the individual from its spiritual essence, the less spiritual it becomes. Doesn't mean that you no longer have the capacity to restore that spirituality or that spiritual wisdom that flows through when you recenter yourself and make that universal connection with the creation. So this is it was kind of interesting that at that point, Dr. Coleman said that he had sworn an oath, signed an agreement not to ever divulge that information. Well, it's quite obvious that everything they do is selling image and selling sex. They do it in the movies. They do it in the newspapers. They're constantly bombarding people with the importance of how you look, and none of which has intrinsic value in the spiritual realm. So I just found that kind of interesting that he wouldn't talk about it. Somehow that was a big secret. But anyone could deduce what they're doing. Anyone can deduce that Freud helped them set up these mental constructs as to how they were going to control society. So this was very, very planned out. And we didn't even get into the discussion about Bernays and how he took Tavistock to a whole different level. That we have this kind of reality, and my general point is that the reality is based on showing us an image of ourselves that is not who we really are, you see. So does it surprise you that they would also suppress any information that would reveal who we really are in archaeological terms or in scientific terms or even in spiritual terms? Because they don't get into spirituality at all, other than demonology. you know, which is the antithesis of spirituality. Mike, that's my comment on that.
Well, of course, I have to agree with you. It's pretty evident that that we are steered away from these things for a purpose. The thing that bugs me, I guess, and always has, is the fact that there are so few people, and I can literally count them on one hand, at least the ones that I know, who are actually passionate about the kind of issues that I presented earlier. You know, I mean, for me, doing something like proving that there's a Sasquatch, locating Noah's Ark, exploring the tunnels under the Andes Mountains, finding Fawcett's Lost City, you know, any of those kind of things is just so tantalizing and so amazing, and the consequences of doing so would be so revealing that I guess I just have a lot of trouble imagining that, you know, you could prefer a football game and a can of beer to something of that magnitude. Nobody Yes. seems to give a darn.
Well, you know, you mentioned Sasquatch, or the abominable snowman, some would even call him. The whole idea that a being like that could hide itself for such a long time without anyone seeing it is strange in and of itself. But then we know that they're into cloning, and if they discovered such a being or killed such a being and went into their usual mode of, let's see what we can make out of this if we cross it with a tomato, you should expect that they have at least the capability to regenerate such a being. And then have fun. Study it, put it in some remote areas, and see how it survives. Let's see if we can turn it into a robot or some kind of super soldier, you know. So we're dealing with beings who are insane, number one. There's no logic to what they do other than to destroy anything that's sacred. We've discussed that numerous times. And I think, again, when you look at in the context of what they do and what they try to prevent us from discovering, it always leads to the truth. They're hiding the truth. You know, I think they would impress us more if they said, hey, you know, we just created a Sasquatch. What do you think of that? And then put it in a zoo and charge money for it, because ultimately they want to make money anyway, don't they?
It's all I seem to want to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting they do that, of course, but that's what they would do. They would teach it to read lines from a movie script and put it in a movie or on a TV series. Probably eventually it would evolve into a state where it could read the news to the public or host a game show. Or host a game show. You know? So you said something about the old airplanes and you used the word Wright at the end of the sentence, and I saw the connection to the Wright brothers when you said that. I'd have to go back and listen to the archive to retrieve exactly what you said. I think you said in their own right.
there's actually quite a bit of evidence of flying machines in ancient times. And when you stop and think about it, I don't see the big deal. I really don't. I mean, when you were a kid, didn't you think about flying? All you got to do is watch the birds, and you say, wow, I wish I could do that. I mean, human nature hasn't changed that much over the eons. You know, why is it so impossible to imagine that the Egyptians had gliders or some kind of airplane? Look at the Nazca lines in Peru, in South America. They become very clear from an altitude of about 3,000 to 6,000 feet as to exactly what they represent. makes you wonder how in the heck that was done from the ground. When you can't, you walk on the Nazca plane, you can't tell what you're walking on. But from 3,000 to 6,000 feet up, it stands out like a sore thumb. Then this woman, Mary Reich, who spent her whole lifetime down there, she had associates who informed her that it was very possible that the ancient Peruvians had hot air balloons. And if they did, they could have directed the whole activity from the air. And that would at least explain why it was visible from the air. But then, of course, that raises another question. Why do you want to make something that's visible from 3,000 to 6,000 feet up, which you can't see at ground level, unless you're doing it for the benefit of somebody who's up there? You know, it just goes on and on and on.
Well, with the amount of technology you described, one wonders if they had chemtrails, too. You know?
Well, maybe that's what wiped them out.
Or GM foods. Or fluoridated water. Vaccinations. You know, all of that stuff.
They may very well have had vaccinations, but I think that in those times, they were a little bit too evolved, if you'll allow me to use that word, to use that kind of knowledge, you know, just for something evil like they do today. I mean, it just seems to me that they were more spiritually inclined in ancient times than they are now.
Well, it would only be evident that they had these things, that they were used out in the open. If they kept it a secret, then that's part of what they're trying to hide from us. Again, it comes to the same thing. They're busy stealing our money. They would not consider sharing something that they consider does not belong to us, unless they can figure out a way to make money with it, you see. They prefer to have us dumbed down and submissive to what they do. But do you see this shifting? Obviously, from what you're describing of these archaeologists who are sort of, I mean, you said they wouldn't lie. As long as they haven't come out of the Congress or the Senate, yes, I'll agree with that.
Well, what I meant by that was the fact that, you know, you go and put your whole life into this and buck the system or buck the university that sent you and say, no, damn it, this is just too important to suppress, and you go ahead and write a book about it. Now, there's been several books. I have them right here. One of them is called Forbidden Archaeology, and another one is called The True Origins of the Human Race. And there's other one that just came out. Can't think of the name of it, but I haven't ordered it yet. But, I mean, the topic is spreading. There's more and more people that say, what's the point in me dedicating my life to finding out all this stuff so that a bunch of morphodites in Washington or elsewhere can come along and say, you're not allowed to know about that? I mean, it's an insult.
Well, you know, if they put a book on a shelf in a library and you pick up that book and read it, and you discover something that maybe inadvertently got into that book or someone overlooked from the outset, and then you talked about that. Say you talked about it on a radio show. Where's the crime in that? Okay, number one. They want to make it a crime to tell the truth or to say something that they've been keeping a secret. Well, you know, when more than one person finds out about it, it's not a secret anymore. And anyone who's originally shared in the conspiracy to conceal whatever the secret is, it is quite capable of leaking the information on their own. It's done all the time. Or it's lied about to misdirect us, to cause us to think some other situation is the reality. Just because trying to cover it up by omission isn't enough. And now, if I go to Google Earth, Jim, and ladies and gentlemen, you can do this yourselves. If you use a little bit of intuition and just look at Google Earth, zoom into an area and do some exploring in the ocean, you may find that there's what appears to be an ancient civilization at the bottom of the ocean, only a couple hundred miles west-southwest of Morocco. And it appears that that might be either part of Atlantis or some connection with Atlantis. And if you examine the ocean floor, you see these very interesting excavation marks that are there. Or if you go to an area which is in the Philippine Sea, sort of midway, let's say latitudinally, midway between Taiwan and the northernmost large island of the Philippines, and go maybe 400 miles east of that area. That may not even be that far, but I'm guessing approximately 400 miles from the strait that's in between Taiwan and the northernmost large island of the Philippines. There's an underwater base there. It's very interesting how they hid it in Google Earth. You have to keep going down through the blurred blue background, and then suddenly something appears. And actually, there are four distinct, let's say, buildings or constructions which are there. Two which definitely look like they have something to do with some sort of energy device. One is a building. It's at least a three-story building, which has a base underneath it. The top three stories of the building have windows cut out in it. And then there is what appears to be a helicopter landing pad. It's got a big H on it with a circle. I mean, this is on Google Earth, folks. You can find this. And there seems to be another circular area where it might be some sort of a power device, like a gigantic crystal or some sort of energized rock that's there with a grate over it. Now, what's been done is these images are somewhat drawn in, although the landing pad itself is not so much an artist drawing. It's an actual photograph that's superimposed into the same level. So it's around 3,291 feet below sea level. I find that to be fascinating because it looks alien in origin, Jim.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yes. What are your impressions on that? And that all came from the top of my head. I'm just trying to recall what I saw in the pictures.
Yeah,
and
the
Japanese inscriptions as well.
Yeah, I remember quite well what's on the pictures. My first question is, where did you get those images from?
From Google Earth. I went down into the depths of the ocean and the Philippine Sea.
No, I mean, okay, I asked the question incorrectly. What prompted you to go to those particular locations?
Let's just say it was a tip. Okay.
Oh, okay. I'll leave it at that. Well, anyway, yes. I
signed an agreement. No, I'm just kidding.
I did see the images, and it's hard to figure what the heck they are, to be honest with you. But I definitely saw the helicopter pad thing, and the other deal almost looks like some kind of heat sink. It's a big circular thing, which is, very, very symmetrical.
Uh-huh.
But then on the outer part of it, it's got all these twisted metal. Well, it looks like metal. I don't know if it is or not. All these twisted metal fins, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that may be a graphic that they inserted to sort of give it a perimeter.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I'm just saying that it really does look bizarre.
Yes.
And then the strangest thing is that, in my opinion, is that thing with the rock. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. You know, then Then there's another image that shows the rock in a, like a cage or a, I don't know, some kind of a confinement thing with bars all around it.
Now, I'd like to ask a question. Why would someone put something like that in Google Earth? The average Joe's not going to find that, I'll tell you. why would someone take the time to do that? And why is it that above those levels, if you go up to sea level, there are some Japanese equipment installed on platforms, allegedly under the guise of measuring weather systems and anomalies that could be approaching Japan. Because this is south of Japan. It's much closer. I would say it's probably equidistant from the Philippines, from Taiwan, and from Japan.
Well, I sure don't know the answer, but I do know that in the area of Japan, they have found amazing undersea artifacts, very ancient in origin. Nobody knows, you know, where they came from or why they were built. Some of them are pretty complicated looking. They got steps cut in them that don't seem to go anywhere. They got grooves and notches and platforms and things like that. So, I mean, it's just another mystery at the bottom of the sea, but there's apparently a lot of them. And I don't think that they're just singled out to Japan. I mean, I'd be willing to bet that if you had some way of scouring the ocean beds, you'd be amazed at the stuff that's down there.
Yeah, well, it's quite obvious that they're doing their best to mask the real images that they're picking up. They leave some of them in there. Some are constructions. Certainly, there's an aspect to what I'm talking about where they look like artist renderings.
Yeah, I picked up on that, especially on some of the, like the, there's nine of them all together. I think 7, 8, and 9 are the weirdest ones as far as, you know, picking up on that rendering, you know, artist rendering aspect of it. The thing that I wasn't sure about is, I mean, how can this stuff be put in there the way it was without Google Earth's cooperation?
Well, that's the whole point. I asked that rhetorical question. Why would anyone take the time to do that? The odds of somebody finding it, if they didn't know it was there, are pretty slim. So for whose purpose was that put there? Well, it's obviously locating something that's at the bottom of the ocean. It's quite dark down there, so they're not going to be able to get very clear images. Yet one image appears to be a satellite photograph, and the other three, which are positioned in what appears to be a satellite setting, seem to have some graphic elements added to them.
Yeah, and I picked up on that very quickly.
Yeah, you can see that where I described the building, to the right of the northern part of the building, to the right of that, or to the east of it, are four pillars, as if they're getting ready to build onto the building, to expand it.
Yeah, they were like right circular columns, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw those. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, why would that be at the bottom of the ocean?
Well, who knows? But it certainly couldn't be there if there wasn't some kind of technology to sustain it. And, you know, the ocean, especially in those depths, is not exactly a benign environment. You're talking about a place where life couldn't sustain itself without enormous technological assistance.
Mm-hmm. Now, the average listener out there should be asking his or herself, or him or herself, excuse me, why is this going on? Why does this thing exist at all? And if it does exist, and I'd have to say it does, Why aren't we being told about it? What secret is being hidden?
Well, not any of it is. The average Joe can't go there to find out the answer either.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why they keep secrets. But that's one that slipped through the cracks. Well, anything, we're running out of time here, Jim. Actually, I had another musical piece that I thought would be really interesting to listen to after the discussion we just had. If you're up for a few minutes of music, I'd be happy to share something with you. Are you still with me, Jim?
Yeah, I said go right ahead.
Oh, didn't hear a word. You went silent for a moment. All right. This is Harry Connick. This is what they think of us.
Oh, step aside, you old ornery tenderfeet, because I'm about to sing my song. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, but my legs ain't bold and my cheeks ain't tan. Well, I'm a cowboy who never saw a cow, never roped a steer, 'cause I don't know how, and I sure ain't fixing to start now. Yippee-ow-kay, hey, yippee-ow-kay. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and I learned to ride, I learn to stand. Well, I'm a riding fool who is up to date. I know every trail in the Lone Star State, 'cause I ride the range in a 48. Oh, yippee-ow-kay, hey, yippee-ow-kay. Look out, I'm gonna show y'all how to ride now. Here we go. Cowboys know about the big corral where the doggies go, 'cause I learned them all on the radio. Oh, yippee-ow-kay, yippee-ow-kay. Now my story's almost done, so listen up, you ain't got much longer now. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, where the West is wild, round the borderland, where the buffalo roam around the zoo, and the Indians make you a rug or two, and the old bar X is a barbecue. Yippee-yi-yo-ki, hey, yippee-yi-yo-ki, hey, yippee-yi-yo-ki. I'm just an old cowhand.
Connick, and I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande. Jim, do you ever get the impression that that's where they want to keep us consciously? That's what they want us to think about who we are? Are you still with me, Jim?
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Oh, I wasn't hearing you again. You went silent.
Well, I don't know what's going on, but maybe they're messing with the communications again, because I was talking the same as I always do. Oh, I don't know. I think any image, you know, that's unrefined and not necessarily going anywhere is probably adequate for their intentions. But I would rather close on a different note, to be honest with you. You know, all the years that you and I have been doing this show, and long before that, on my own, all of the different topics I've tried to investigate, the interesting people I've met and what have you, the one thing that I've never, ever been able to accomplish, I would like to see the people of the world get together and solve one stinking mystery. I don't care what it is. It could be, you know, whether or not there are lost cities. It could be about the Sasquatch. It could be about any of the things we mentioned tonight, but I think it would just be interesting to see a bunch of people say, you know what, let's do something. So far, never happened. So I put that out as a challenge. You know, here's everybody sitting around, you know, wanting to be instructed and entertained and given information, and that's all very well and good, but they should pitch in and do something to make this sort of stuff happen. I think it would be amazing to see that happen. It might start a trend.
I agree. In fact, that's the whole reason why we bring out the information in the first place, isn't it?
Well, maybe we have to actually instruct them to do something with it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to take it to the next step and supply the suggestion. I mean, I could think of a dozen things that would be earth-shattering and terribly exciting to do. It would just take the cooperation and the support of a number of people.
Well, why don't we do that for the next show? You compile a list, I'll compile one, and we'll make a comparison and present some ideas.
Well, then the only other thing we got to get past is all of the different governments that might not want it to happen and the lack of funds and all of that. But see, that's the point of having a big group.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is the will of the people. We're not even interested in a revolution. Just let's do something. Something to change the complexion of the world, even if it's something little.
Yes, well, I agree with you. There's not much I can add to that, Jim, other than I want to thank you for being on the show and your fabulous information and your insights into our reality and what it could be. And certainly want to thank you for your contributions to science. And there'll be a time in the near future where the whole world will know about Jim Murray and and his many inventions. So I wish you a good night and a great weekend, my friend.
Same to you, Don, and thank you for having me on. I always enjoy it, and I look forward to coming back next week.
Okay. Same here. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guest, scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. I want to thank Windtalkers Radio Network for making Evident Footprints heard around the world. And over at BBS Radio tonight, Seth Hendrick on the sound. I also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday evening when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truott, Ph.D. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.